Okay, so let's cover some of the hypotheses on the latitudinal gradient in diversity. Why do we see greater species richness in the tropics compared to the temperate zone? There have been a lot of hypotheses proposed, probably over 20 different hypotheses that are sort of related to one another, but we're going to highlight about seven, and go over some ways that you can characterize these hypotheses, kind of group them to help remember which ones, what they are and how they're related. So we have a number of deterministic hypotheses that we'll go through, which are related to both equilibrium and non-equilibrium models. Most of those are going to fall into the equilibrium model set. So things that depend upon sort of interactions between species or constraints on systems that lead to these patterns in diversity. We also have a couple of null hypotheses, and one that we'll go over in particular of how a latitudinal gradient diversity can be generated just by this, the arrangement of species within a bounded gradient like we have. So let's go through some of those. Okay, I'll try and keep my chat box open where I can see it. So feel free to chime in if you have questions by voice or on the chat. So with a null hypothesis, we are particularly interested in a mid-domain effect. So this is where we could have a random distribution of geographic ranges. So we have a random distribution of those ranges. And because we have a constraint on a bounded gradient or a gradient with edges, anytime we kind of distribute those geographic ranges across that bounded gradient, we're more likely to wind up where more species ranges intersect in the center of the gradient than towards the edges. So these hard edges make that possible. So we have the greatest range overlap by chance midway between the poles. So if we have all these different kinds of geographic ranges, imagine all these shapes are different species, we throw them on this bounded gradient here, then by chance, we're probably going to have more intersection of species ranges here in the middle. So another way of thinking about this is some people call this the pancake hypothesis. So if you have a big plate and then you have a whole bunch of pancakes that you make and you randomly throw those onto the plate, you're going to have the greatest concentration of pancakes in the middle. You know, so if you were to stick a fork through any part of that plate, you would run through the most number of pancakes in the middle of that plate just by chance. So this kind of, you know, a lot of times when people are testing for whether or not there is a latitudinal gradient diversity, they kind of have to consider this, the gradient, in addition to these sorts of null hypotheses that could explain the pattern without any kind of real biological explanation. But the more interesting hypotheses, of course, are the deterministic ones. Some of these fall into the categories of circumstances where communities have not yet reached a steady state. So after some sort of perturbation, and we know that Earth's surface has been perturbed in many cases over history, there have been a number of different kinds of disturbances, glaciation events, shifting of continental plates, how those shifting of continents has also driven and changed global climate patterns. There is a very dynamic aspect to what happens on the surface of the Earth and how this can affect the distribution and the concentration of species. If those things are never really settled at equilibrium, we could still be seeing shifts in the proportion of species and how they're arranged spatially, but still in the process of kind of being worked out following a historical disturbance. So if we consider things like the Pleistocene glaciation cycles, we might still be seeing the effects of the retreat and expansion of glaciers on speciation patterns that are existing in the temperate zone or in the tropics. So this is not something that necessarily suggests a particular latitudinal gradient diversity. It just kind of, it's an extra sort of layer of thought that we need to incorporate in considering how species are distributed across the surface and the possibility that these kinds of patterns are still in flux from previous disturbances and changes in Earth's landscape. And with these different equilibrium models, these suggest that some steady state has already been reached. So the forces that are increasing diversity are balanced by the forces that reduce diversity, so that you have a stable metric of diversity fixed over time. So if you have things like a productivity hypothesis that the tropics are more productive than the temperate zone, we have these kinds of solar inputs into the tropics that are allowing for greater production within the tropical latitudes that different species can use and partition that generates higher species diversity. So that would be sort of an equilibrium hypothesis with that model. So looking at that, let's look a little bit more at that one hypothesis that is a deterministic hypothesis that is associated with an equilibrium model. So here we're looking at the change in, we know that species richness increases as we increase in temperature and precipitation. Both of those variables combined can give us something called potential evapotranspiration. And basically showing that where we have hotter, wetter areas, we tend to see higher species richness, shown here for vertebrates. And that potential evapotranspiration ratio, that metric, is strongly linked to the amount of solar radiation that we have in any given point on Earth. The tropics receives more intense solar energy, and this supports the idea that we can have higher productivity of plant communities and thus higher diversity of the producers and subsequently the dependent consumers in those areas. And then we know that the tropics receives more intense solar input, thinking back to the shape of the planet and how the intensity of solar radiation shifts across latitudes because of the curvature of the Earth. Excuse me. So here's how that can work. If we do have higher productivity in the tropics, we kind of also assume that other things are happening to generate the high diversity that we see. So if we imagine that there is some sort of resource gradient in any system like this, if we have higher productivity, we're kind of raising the bar of how species can use that resource gradient. So we have more resources that are available along a smaller spectrum of that resource gradient, a narrower spectrum. So ideally and theoretically, this would allow species to partition that resource gradient even more finely in a place where we have really high productivity. So this is kind of akin to niche partitioning, and where you have higher productivity, you can subdivide that same resource gradient more finely. So in order to like kind of support this hypothesis, we also need to show that this kind of pattern is occurring, the finer partitioning of resources within a more productive environment. There are other kinds of exceptions, of course, to this pattern, where we do have very productive environments that nevertheless have pretty low biodiversity. There are places like salt marshes, shallow eutrophic lakes that have really, really high nutrient inputs, but still is not manifested into high species richness that you see there. Another deterministic hypothesis that we see and we can consider is harshness, the harshness of an environment, and how that changes across latitudes. As we think about temperate conditions compared to tropical conditions, temperate areas are very can be very harsh. We have very high seasonality, and with that seasonality, we have extremes in temperatures, where we have icy and cold, or hot and dry climates, or just hot in the summer and very cold in the winter climates. But that harshness, and especially having those extremes there, can lead to higher extinction rates or lower colonization potential. Both of those things can affect the species that tend to accumulate or maintain themselves in a place that's a really harsh environment. We could also say the same thing for for elevational gradients. So high elevations tend to have harsher environments, colder temperatures, more likely to experience snow cover, and just kind of difficult conditions for species to persist in. This also can have an effect on the resource specialization compared to more benign environments. Now, sort of related to that, the harshness of climate, another related hypothesis is temporal stability or seasonality, for example. As we look across latitudes, we have more and more variable climates within the temperate zone compared to the tropics throughout the year. And even on a like temperature changes within a day can be very different from place to place. But especially focusing on those yearly variations in temperature, we see much more variable climates in the temperate zone. If this prevents resource specialization, if this prevents those kinds of niche partitioning patterns that we see, if that becomes less likely in very variable climates, then we might expect those places to hold and support fewer species. So temporal variability tends to favor generalists at the expense of specialists. So another way of saying that is that tropical species have more opportunity to adapt and specialize within more predictable environments. And I want you to note that we can apply Janssen's hypothesis to this. This is pretty much exactly what Janssen's hypothesis is suggesting. The fundamental root of the hypothesis is that the differences in seasonality, the differences in the temperatures that species experience at a given location in the temperate zone are much broader than the range of temperatures and environments that a species experiences in the tropics throughout the year. And when you experience a much narrower set of environmental or thermal regimes, you have an opportunity to specialize. You don't have to be a generalist. You don't have to do well in both cold and hot place and hot climates. Whereas in the temperate zone, that's not the case. Species need to be able to tolerate variable climates in order to persist and maintain populations. There are some exceptions here where we might have a very stable environment, but nevertheless have low diversity. For example, the deep ocean. It has a very stable environment from day to day and even seasonally, but we have other kinds of factors that maintain, kind of restrict species richness in those places. Any questions so far? So I think I've told you before, but I'll just remind you that this will be a final exam question, like going back through these different hypotheses and explaining them. I put it on the final every year pretty much. So being able to, you know, be familiar with these hypotheses as well as the exceptions and kind of how each of these are linked and how they apply in some circumstances, but maybe not others. Those are, that's all, you know, fair game for the final exam. Okay, so another sort of deterministic hypothesis that we often think about is the diversity of habitats that we have within the tropics compared to the temperate zones. Here, and so we're kind of categorizing this as the level of habitat heterogeneity that we see in tropical places. So diversity is higher in more complex habitats and more heterogeneous habitats. And that diversity in environments and diversity of habitats and substrate types promotes specialization. It also can promote isolation. And if in those circumstances, we can actually have higher speciation due to this habitat heterogeneity. As well as different kinds of, on a local scale, we might have more opportunities for coexistence if species are specialized on very particular substrates within a habitat type. And if we just look at forests, for example, we tend to see that tropical habitats have, and tropical forests, have more spatially varied or vertically varied heterogeneous and complex habitats. So just looking at foliage height diversity, as we consider, as we look at forests that have increasing levels of vegetation in the height of the forest, we have more kinds of strata, forest strata, understory, subcanopy, canopy, upper canopy levels for species to kind of specialize in. And those larger forests can hold more species. This has been shown for birds, where bird species diversity has an increasing relationship with foliage height diversity. So the taller a forest canopy is, the more layers there are, and the more species that can specialize there. But we have really tall forests in the temperate zone. So it's not just about the height of the forest, but it's also about the diversity of layers that are found within forests. That in tropical forests, we often can see maybe five different layers of vegetation, whereas in the temperate zone, we may only see like maybe two or three tops of an understory, a subcanopy, and a canopy, or maybe just an understory and a canopy. So forest structural diversity is often much lower in the temperate zone and much higher in the tropics. So on this kind of localized scale, we can see how local effects can affect, or you know, these kinds of local structural patterns can affect diversity. There are places though that have, they exhibit low heterogeneity spatially, but yet still have high diversity, and that would be a case where we have marine plankton. Another case could be across the Amazon basin, we can have relatively low heterogeneity, like low change in the kind of change in forest structure, and even changes in, most species have really broad ranges in the Amazon too, but we can still have really high local diversity, despite having rather low spatial heterogeneity across broad expanses of space in the forest. So we see this pattern even within the temperate zone. For example, if we look at the provinces in Canada, British Columbia has one of the most diverse provinces, especially in tree diversity, or not tree, in forest types and ecosystems. So it's also a very heterogeneous place in the landscape. So we have lots of mountain ranges and we have zonation of habitats that occur along at different elevations. So we can see these kinds of patterns exhibited in within the temperate zone across heterogeneous places. So it's with 1,140 native species of vertebrates in BC, we have the most diverse topography, the most biologically diverse province in Canada. And this sort of makes sense. One of the things we like to really think about with the tropics, and one of the things that really comes to mind, is having lots of species, but also lots of opportunities for interspecific interactions. We think about all the kinds of relationships that are just these crazy interactions that we see that have evolved over time between like ants and acacias, or ants and lots of things, ants and ant birds, or different kinds of host-parasite relationships that seem to be much more complex and interwoven and just plain old, like just very diverse across groups within the tropics. So this kind of this idea that more species creates a positive feedback on diversification because you have increased biotic pressures like competition, predation, mutualisms, and parasitism, where we have the sense where diversity can beget diversity. So for example, we might have predators that hold prey populations in check. If those predators are focusing on multiple prey species, it prevents any single prey population from becoming super abundant, where if that prey population increases in size, it becomes a larger target for it becomes more susceptible to that predation pressure. So predators can effectively keep multiple populations of prey in check and allow for more prey species to actually coexist at collectively lower abundances. And for another example, in host-parasite relationships, we do have more host species in the tropics. So we have more diversity of parasites that can potentially colonize and specialize on those species. So we have higher kind of diversity begetting diversity again. This is sort of a circular argument though in some ways. So although it's cool to think about the strength of interactions and how that can lead to increased diversity, we don't really know if it's a cause or a consequence. It still doesn't explain the initial diversity of the tropics compared to the temperate zone. A very fundamental hypothesis that we can think about is that Earth's area, the surface area, increases as we go from the temperate zone to the tropics. So due to this curvature of the Earth, we have greater area in the tropics. And because of the species area relationship, we know that we can accumulate more species in a place where we have larger area. So this is just an extension of island biogeography, or a fundamental premise of island biogeography that can be applied to explain the latitudinal gradient and diversity. And finally, a cool thing to think about is age. So maybe the tropics are more diverse because they've just been around longer. They've had more time to accumulate species over millennia. Tropical land masses have been concentrated in tropical latitudes for a longer period of time. If we look at patterns of continental drift, most of that historical period, the land masses have been sort of centered around the tropics for a very long period. So they've had more time to accumulate species in those places. This was a study by Rondon and colleagues in 2013 that looked at the slope of the relationship in the latitudinal diversity gradient. So how steep is the slope as species, as we change in species number from the tropics to the temperate zone? Is it really steep, or is it more shallow? And looking for across a whole lot of studies representing plants and animals of both marine and terrestrial environments, they looked at time periods and grouped them into different paleoclimatic categories and compared the slopes for a steepness of that relationship for these different categories. So what did they find? And they were looking at the steepness of the slopes changes over time when we have different kinds of climatic regimes that are characterizing Earth's history, ranging from periods of time when we had a warmer environment historically to partial glaciations historically, or full glaciation, or whenever we had this kind of snowball Earth way back 650 million years ago. And what they found was that latitudinal gradients for clades, for groups of species that originated in warm climates, are steeper with a really strong tropical affinity. So when things originate in the tropics, we tend to see within that group a stronger slope or a steeper slope for those species. And for a variety of the plants and animals that they looked at, most of the clades radiated within tropical climates. And so they kind of extend this to explain that the extant tropical diversity peak is really kind of a signature of what has happened historically. So it's really, it's in part at least being generated by the persistence of these lineages that have adapted to a planet with a very tropical climate. So here in this, they're looking at marine studies and terrestrial studies for different kinds of groups that they looked at, where the slope of the relationship is steeper in these places where we have a warmer climate, places in time where we experience a warmer climate. So the higher diversity has arisen among tropical clades because the Earth has been predominantly tropical throughout most of its history. And that signature is still revealed in these areas where the warmest periods have the steepest slope in the diversity gradient. So they conclude that current diversity gradients actually carry the footprint of these historical climates. And it's largely in these organisms, it's a holdover from the diversification patterns that have happened a long time ago. Any questions about this? Any questions about these hypotheses?
Does this age hypothesis, is this basically the cradle and museum hypothesis?
Yes and no. It's in the same line of thought, and we're going to get to that next. We're going to look at the cradle and museum hypotheses next. Some of those cradle and museum hypotheses have been, it depends on, let's see. There are different studies that have looked at the cradle and museum hypotheses, and they kind of focus on different time periods. So yes, in a way, this is related to that. Although the example that we're going to look at with the cradle and museum hypothesis is going to focus on a slightly different time period and different taxa. But it's the same concept. And that is, as we go on, kind of this idea of whether kind of extending this to ask whether tropical places have been the center of origination of species, like where you have higher diversification rates within the tropics, or if they have just been around for a very long time and have slowly accumulated species over time, even though speciation happens at the same rate across latitudes. So the age hypothesis does relate to the cradle and the museum ideas, although we'll discuss it in a slightly different way. That answer your question though?
Yeah, it does things.
Okay, sorry. It was a good segue into the next topic though, and the next next idea. And actually I want to pass along a paper, I'll do so after lecture, that is pretty cool. It's a tree article that considers the how the slope of the relationship has changed over time from a different study and a different perspective. But kind of thinking about when the slope of the diversity gradient was steepest and how that relates to speciation versus extinction rates in the tropics versus the temperate zone.
Also, I think there's a question in the chat.
There is? Oh, you know what? Yeah, thanks. I wasn't scrolling down. It was just showing me the same. Cool, thanks. Regarding the mid-domain hypothesis, have there been any studies comparing the diversity seen in the tropics relative to that seen towards? Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, that would be really cool to see. So like the mid-domain hypothesis, if you could like look at different points in time and consider how the distribution of land area has changed, and if that affects the accumulation of species in the middle of the gradient. Is that, Amanda, is that your kind of the question summarized? Yeah, that's a good question, and I'm not sure that anyone's really done that, but it seems like that would be a really cool thing to pursue. And it'd be possible if we have a model of where the continents occurred on in space, we could totally like predict where the peak of species richness should be based on the mid-domain effect. So, but I don't think anyone's done that. That'd be really cool. Yeah, good thoughts and good question. I don't have a more thorough answer though, and I don't know that anyone's really looked at that. Yeah, good. Keep the questions coming. I'll try to keep looking and make sure that I'm updating the chat box so I don't get stuck on one slice where I can't see the most common or the most recent post. Okay, how are we doing on time? Okay, we're okay. Super. So are the tropics a diversity cradle or a diversity museum, as we'll try to get into? And we'll look at a study that has tested this idea with birds. So if we have a tropical cradle, what this is suggesting is that tropical species tend to be younger. So a tropical cradle means that the tropics are really generating species quickly. So we have high speciation rates, and we have more recent speciation rates within the tropics, more recent speciation. If we, so like a phylogeny with a tropical cradle would, for example, look something like this, where we see in a phylogeny of species that many speciation events take place recently. Whereas with tropical museums, we're sort of thinking that these areas are accumulating species over time. The process of speciation may not be extremely high. The rates of speciation may not be extremely high, but the rates of extinction are lower. So species, once they're generated, tend to stick around for a very long time. And one way of testing between these hypotheses is to look at these various branch lengths that separate sister taxa within the tropics and asking whether those divergence points in sister taxa are older or younger. And that would give us some inference on the relative rates of speciation in the tropics compared to the temperate zone. It doesn't tell us anything about extinction rates. And that's a tricky thing to incorporate, but at least by looking at the pattern of speciation rates over time, we can start to get at this hypothesis. So here, what we would expect though, kind of extending this the phylogenies to a plot, if we looked at the ages of sister species pairs of the most closely related species in a phylogeny, what we would expect to find at lower latitudes, sorry, this is supposed to be 90 degrees here. So from 0 to 90 degrees, so as we go from the tropics to temperate latitudes, we expect those ages of sister species pairs to be younger. The divergent states between sister species should have happened relatively recently. If the tropics are a museum, we would expect to see the opposite pattern, where sister species divergence times would be relatively far back in history, so that would occur at older divergent states compared to the temperate zone. So this has actually been just a quick question here. Does that account for species pairs where one member is now extinct to account for different extinction rates? Yeah, so extinction rates are not really, they're tough to incorporate altogether. Just it's really hard to know what species have gone extinct within the phylogeny. So most phylogenies that we create are only with extant species. And it's really hard to model extinct species into a phylogeny, especially if those extinctions have happened, you know, way back when. We'd have to like have really good information from the fossil record and incorporate those. For those reasons, because it's so difficult, extinction is something that has to be modeled separately. And so it doesn't really account for differing extinction rates. And that's an important thing to consider. It can be done, and it's, but it's not exactly straightforward to calculate. So there are assumptions and that have to go into those models in order to account for extinction rates. So what has been done, though, is to look at extant species and to look at the phylogenies of those extant species within birds and within mammals and look at those divergent states between sister species and all the different kinds of sister species pairs that occur within the phylogeny. And what that analysis showed, and this was by Jason Weir and Dolph Schluter. This was published back in 2007. I believe it was a Nature paper. It was Nature or Science, and I can't remember which one. I think it was a Nature paper though. That sister species pair divergence states are in the tropics, well, they show a negative relationship. So looking back here, they're actually showing this tropical museum relationship is more supported across birds and across mammals, that divergence states range broadly in the tropics at this zero latitude area. But there are many instances of old lineages that are existing within the tropics. You don't see those, where you see the gap in the data is here. We don't see really, really old lineages and old divergence states existing in the temperate zone for birds or for mammals. There are lots of speciation that has occurred recently in the tropics, but it's also balanced by these very old events too. So they propose that speciation rates are actually higher in the temperate zone, that more speciation has occurred recently within the temperate zone, and that the tropics tend to, although have high speciation rates, they tend to accumulate species over time. This is actually a very contentious idea, and it got a lot of responses from other studies that wrote in to kind of challenge their study, challenge their publication, and it's a really kind of cool set of papers to go through, because it also has to do with how much we actually know about the phylogenies. How much confidence do we have that not only are we able to estimate the right kinds of divergence times between taxa, but how well do we have a handle on all the taxa that exist, especially in the tropics where we have species that are, we're just coming up with robust phylogenies for them, and we're still discovering species that are there. So how does that kind of lack of information affect or potentially bias an analysis like this? So I know that Jason Weir, as one of the primary authors on this paper, has been spending his career essentially trying to follow up on this hypothesis and see if this is really the case by looking at potential cases for allopatric speciation and divergence within tropical populations to make sure that we're not biasing this by assuming that these older lineages are not made up of populations that we just, of different species that have diverged more recently that we just haven't really detected. So this study though does show that support for the tropical museum hypothesis. Okay, so multiple factors are likely responsible for this diversity gradient. Productivity tends to side with the tropics being more species rich. Harshness hypothesis proposes that the temperate areas experience greater extinction rates. Stability is higher in the tropics. Diversity is higher in the tropics with habitat heterogeneity, either on a local scale, perhaps thinking about some regional scales. Habitat diversity can harbor more species within a certain local region in the combination with resource specialization. And then interspecific interactions, area, and age all kind of lean towards higher diversity within the tropics. So these can be kind of categorized into different climatic factors, with the productivity, harshness, stability relationships, of how species respond to climate and how climate varies in how extreme the climates are or how stable the climates are or how much solar energy there is. Habitat biotic factors and habitat diversity and interspecific interactions kind of characterize these two hypotheses. And then we have larger scale biogeographic factors like area and age. So the different kinds of groups all point towards having higher diversity in the tropics and offer different angles on that explanation. Any questions about this? So think about how these relationships, how these hypotheses are related to one another. Think about exceptions to the rules also. And think about what you believe is the most convincing, the most convincing kind of argument for why the tropics are more diverse than the temperate zone. Okay, I want to spend the next few minutes exploring other kinds of latitudinal trends that relate to the latitudinal diversity gradient in some way or another. And most of these are big kinds of biogeographic patterns that we can observe across spatial scales. One of these is called Rapoport's rule, and this is related to range sizes and how range sizes occur across latitudes, or how range sizes differ across latitudes, and how this is in turn related to things like species turnover that we see across landscapes. Ooh, good question. Have there been any studies on the relative impact of humans on species in the tropics compared to temperate zones where population density agricultural practices are similar? Yeah, that's good. That's a good question too. Yeah, just like I wonder if there have been if you could just document human-induced extinctions and see if extinctions have sort of perhaps steepened the latitudinal gradient in diversity. If you have human impacts that are higher in the temperate zone, if those pressures are more kind of manifested in the temperate zone versus the tropics. But I don't know that there's any study on that. These are good things that I'm going to have to look up later. But there can definitely be some sort of anthropogenic effects of humans. And since we've existed on the planet for such a long time at this point, or, you know, in recent history, there, I think it's long enough to start kind of seeing the effects of the human population on the latitudinal gradient, possibly. But that would be kind of cool to look into, and I don't know. Okay, good questions, guys. I'm gonna have to like tally these up later and then and look into them and see if I can find any studies that are out there that address these topics. Okay, so Rappaport's rule shows that species have larger range sizes at higher latitudes. Species, in contrast, have smaller range sizes in the tropics, and this is showing the area of geographic range compared to the range center and where that occurs across latitudes. It's a scattered relationship, and there's a lot of variation here, but there is this kind of constraint where we find very few species that have very small ranges that occur at where those midpoints of the range, or the geographic range center, occurs at really high latitudes, temperate latitudes. So we find this dearth of species representing this part of the triangle. And this is for birds across North America. Species with smaller geographic ranges tend to have range centers that occur at lower latitudes. These different examples for marine mollusks and for trees in the continental US and Canada show this kind of reverse pattern between, as we decrease species richness moving to higher latitudes, we also tend to see an increase in the mean breadth of latitudinal range. So range size is increasing, and we have this kind of this corresponding trade-off in lowering our local species richness at these different latitudes. So this is related to the latitudinal gradient diversity. In one way in particular, so as we see these species richness declining, well, we're also seeing broader ranges. We're also seeing like more faunal overlap as you go towards higher latitudes. So species have bigger ranges. There's lower beta diversity at higher latitudes. At lower latitudes in the tropics, species have smaller ranges. As you go from one place to another across geographic space, you're more likely to move through the ranges of more species. You're more likely to experience higher species turnover over space. So that aspect of Rappaport's rule relates directly to a landscape scale beta diversity and the differences we see across latitudes. We also see this pattern in the mean breadth of elevational ranges. And I think I will just finish after this point. So with elevation, we also see this corresponding change in lower species richness at higher elevations and broader elevational ranges as we move up a mountain slope. So species at lower elevations for Costa Rica and in Venezuela for trees and for birds, species at lower elevations tend to have narrower elevational ranges. And yeah, just one final point before we go, that even within the temperate zone, we see this pattern of range size decreasing as we move from north to south. So this is showing range sizes getting smaller as we go from the black colors, the purple colors to red for North American trees. So we also expect this to lead to higher species turnover or higher beta diversity in the tropics as range sizes overall decrease in size. Okay, it is 11:50. Thanks everybody for your questions. Those are great things to think about, and I'll try to follow up with some studies and post some things online that if I can find I can find material. Are there any questions before we go?
Yeah, I had a quick question. Just want to ask about exam details. I think I missed the first couple minutes of the class.
Yeah, for anybody that came in late. So what we're deciding to do, the final exam, well, first of all, the final exam is going to be, you have a couple of different options in terms of how the exam is weighted. And that is explained online in the announcements page. So you have the option of continuing forward with the final exam and having it weighted just the same as we have planned so far, in terms of the percent of the course grade. Or you can opt to have the exam worth 5% of your grade. And so essentially, basically not taking it. And then having the rest of your grade kind of reappropriated to those other sections for your assignments and the midterm and the paper. But that's one thing, and that's already been posted. But the final exam, as we're going to run it, is what I'm going to do is it needs to be turned in. It needs to be submitted by the end of the exam, the regular exam scheduled period. So on April 24th, it's supposed to run from 8:30 to probably 11:30. But I'm going to say at 12 p.m. it needs to be submitted on April 24th. But I will post the exam on April 20th so that you can start working on it. And that will give you, then that's the Monday before the exam. So that will give you 4 days to kind of work on the exam and generate your answers and kind of partition your time and juggle it with all the other classes that you're doing to submit it by the 24th. And right, with that 5% option on the final exam, I think you don't have to choose. Yeah, Sarah, I'll get to your question too in a second. You don't have to choose if you do the 5% option or the regular option. You can take the exam or opt not to take it. But you don't have to make a decision ahead of time. What will happen is that I will calculate your grade with both of those alternatives, and you'll be given the higher grade, however that plays out. If your grade is higher from the 5% option, or if your grade is higher from the regular course distribution that we've already proposed. Yeah, and you're gonna get more, okay, so it is an open book exam. There's no way I can ask you to not use resources and, you know, and to complete the exam. So it's open book, open resources, like, you know, I think that's just that's the way it has to be. And you will have more than 48 hours to work on it. So you're gonna have the opportunity from April 20th to April 24th. So it's gonna be like, what, 4 times 24 hours. I can't do it after 72. 96 hours, I guess. 96 hours to work on it rather than the 48 hours. So from April 20th to April 24th, you'll have that chance to work on it, but I still need it submitted by 12 p.m. on April the 24th. Is that clear to everybody? Bhaskar, is that clear to you too?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar structure to the midterm. We'll just stick with the same kind of question structure. So some of the short answer questions and then a number of long answer essay questions. It will be slightly longer in length than the midterm, but the same kind of structure to expect.
Great, thanks.
Cool. When will the practice exam be up? I'm not sure. I'll try and get to it as soon as I can, but let's see. I'll try to post something by over the weekend so you can start working on that. Oh, if I say these things, I have to write them down so I make sure that I follow through. So I'll try to post a practice exam over the weekend so you can start looking at that. Okay, any other questions, guys? We might have to rush a little bit if we're gonna get through the rest of our material, but we'll just see. We'll see where we get. I'd like to talk with, we're almost through with this lecture, and then we'll visit biodiversity and extinctions on Monday, and our last class will focus on climate change before we call it an end to the course. All right, guys. thanks for attending. Thanks for your questions. And just shoot me an email if you have anything else that comes up. And have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.